I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Sports Saturday.
It's complete. Touchdown!
Cougar Sports Saturday. A presentation of KSL Sports.
KSL Sports.
Left wing for three.
He got it again!
BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans for Cougar fans. Brought to you by Any Hour Services Electrical Plumbing, Heating, and Air. Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On Utah's legacy home of the Cougars. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday. Any moment now, the first scrimmage of fall camp will end, and we'll receive a phone call from defensive coordinator Jay Hill. Look, we've been to many a practice in the Kalani Sitake era. They do tend to run long. There was a chance we could have gotten him before the end of hour number one. That obviously hasn't happened. We're starting hour number two, but he is coming. Yes. Rest assured, we have confirmation he will join us as soon as he can, and that ends. So we'll keep you posted on that. And we'll probably go to break here a little early in this segment just so we can open up time after about the 1:12 mark on the clock to make sure that we have plenty of runway for Jay Hill, defensive coordinator, to join us and talk about that scrimmage.
Because there's a lot to unpack with Jay Hill, and there's a lot to unpack with this BYU team. They're now 2 weeks through fall camp and 3 weeks away from the first game. And I mean, real quick, Matt, like, BYU's 3 weeks away till the season kicks off. Today, the Big 12 Conference announced BYU's new home. They announced the ticket sales for the Big 12 championship game on December 2nd. Feeling like you're going to lay down some, invest in some tickets because you're confident BYU's going to go to that Big 12 title game?
I'm not going to lay down any money for tickets to go to that game. However, if you're a college football junkie, I might recommend you do it just because my first time, especially if you haven't been, was that your first time?
It was.
At Big 12 Media Days? Mine as well. It is an impressive facility. I understand the nickname now, the eighth wonder of the world, Jerry World, because it was really cool. I don't think you could go wrong. And look, the last couple of games, the last two Big 12 championship games have been some of the best championship games in all of college football.
And last two games without Texas or Oklahoma.
Yeah, 2 years ago, Baylor and Oklahoma State, who could forget that run into the pylon where it looked like the Cowboys could keep their playoff hopes alive, stuffed at the inch line, our boy Sean McDonough. And then last year was phenomenal with Max Duggan. I was really rooting for him. There was some questionable play calling at the end by TCU, but that was a great game between the Wildcats and the Horned Frogs, so they've been great games.
Okay, early prediction. Let's just call it right here. We don't have to be held to it, but okay. Big 12 championship game, tickets are on sale right now, 4 months out. Who do you think is going to be playing in that game from the Big 12 in December in Jerry's World? If you had to say way too early pick right now before a game is even played, who you calling in
okay.
that title game?
I'm going to go – let me eliminate some teams quickly.
Okay.
I don't believe Kansas State's getting back. I think there
is BYU in the mix in November. Are we talking about BYU in the championship hunt in November?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I don't. It's a really tough stretch. I mean, even the games that we think they should win, they're not guarantees. Like we're talking about Cincinnati like some bums. The Bearcats could come in and win.
I think they're going to get smoked by BYU.
Okay. I hope you're right. I'm just saying.
Cincy's bad on offense. Emory Jones, yeah, I'm not buying into Scott.
I don't love
Emory
Jones
either.
Okay, so we're writing out Cincinnati. I'm writing off Kansas State. I'm writing off Baylor. I'm writing off Houston. So I'm really picking between six teams. I'm going to go with one team, the Texas Longhorns, and I'm going to go – my dark horse is going to be the Texas Tech Red Raiders.
Okay. I like that. I'm going to go with Texas as well. Against Baylor. Baylor's got 8 home games this year.
Oh.
Baylor gets back to the Big 12 title game.
I just don't believe in Chapin. That's my hang-up.
That's fair.
There.
Blake Chapin, he was
a
quarterback.
I like Chuck more than Chapin.
Yeah, that's fair. And there's some questions at the quarterback spot with a lot of these teams, but Baylor's got 8 home games, and I like that piece because I focus a lot on the schedule. Baylor got some schedule breaks. Oklahoma State's a sleeper because it's a weak schedule by Big 12 standards, at least right now.
I'll tell you one team we can absolutely write off.
Who?
Iowa State. With that gambling scandal, write them off. That should be an easy win for BYU. They are not getting to that game.
Starting quarterback out due to gambling, potentially. I don't know the suspension length, but he's involved in the gambling. Starting running back dealing with the gambling stuff as well. So I'm curious to see how long the length of the suspension is. Seems like the world is a little bit more lenient on gambling than years past with Pete Rose, but still,
it's one thing.
It's a bad look,
in my opinion. This is entirely my opinion. It's one thing to be gambling on other games, but when you're getting involved with your own team's games, that's where there's a real problem.
And then there's a video of Hunter Deckers, the quarterback, saying $500 on his game, and he's trying to impress chicks, and you're like,
yeah,
that was not a good look, bro. No. That was not good for the TikTok. I know that. Social media clout is where it's at, but not a good look. We got to take a break. Again, Jay Hill, we know he's coming, but when we're hoping on the other side. Defensive coordinator Jay Hill next here on Cougar Sports Saturday.
Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday. Talking a lot of BYU football fall camp here. The scrimmage has concluded. And any moment now, we'll get a call from defensive coordinator Jay Hill talking about what happened inside the Vail Edwards Stadium and get a reaction from the defensive coordinator on how he thinks his defense is coming along 2 weeks through camp. So any moment now, we'll get a call from Jay Hill.
How impressed have you been with this staff and the intensity that they've brought to practice? Because you just tell Jay Hill... he's a very vocal guy. He'll talk some smack to some of the players. He's intense.
Yeah, it's been really fun to watch. I think they've done a good job so far, too, of balancing the right amount of physicality, because there's a tricky balance that's always hard to find in fall camp, which is how physical do we play to avoid injury? Because especially at this point in camp, I think every day we get closer to the game, we'll ask Jay Hill this, like, which vets were held out of the scrimmage? I think we're going to start to see guys taper off a little bit in these physical situations. But for position battles and two deep spots that are up in the air, they got to play real football, because at the end of the day, that's what determines success, right? And it's not a perfect science, because there's been a lot of situations in the past, different staffs, where they made calls. Like, one situation that always comes to mind for me is 2015, Eric Tanaka getting the starting safety spot and just couldn't play, right? And then Wadsworth came in and instantly changed the tune of that defense. So some calls that are going to be made for game one may not hold up as the season goes on, but it's been nice to see that they've been physical, because when you're as poor as a run defense as this team was last year, you can only get better by playing physical football, right?
You can text us 57500, share your thoughts on this BYU team, also any questions you maybe have during fall camp. You know, Matt, it's an interesting storyline with this BYU team every year without fail, and it was on display at Big 12 Media Day. A lot of the coach said, when asked about BYU, oh, you know, when you line up against a BYU, it's going to be a mature team, a physical team. They're going to be well-disciplined. Coach Kalani coached them well. It's always a veiled shot at the age, you know, with BYU. If you had to guess, Matt,
What do you think the average age of this BYU football team is in 2023? Just all of them together, average age.
You're not
of this
asking
team.
The right guy, because I'm down there quite a bit, so I see what these players look like. It's not as old as you think. That's the spoiler. I'd say the average age is 22 and 2 months old.
The average age is 21.7 years old for this team, which is a little bit down from it's always been around 21 years old the last couple years. I bring this up because we will have press conferences from the opposing teams this year where, if you think about last year, Oregon, Dan Lanning said, you know, playing BYU, it's tough. You're going to go up against 23-year-olds, 24-year-olds. You go, that is not correct. Now, to his credit, and to any coach that does bring up the 23, 24-year-old thing, Simi Mwala, Utah offensive lineman?
Old.
He looks like he's about 40 years old, man. I'm not kidding you. I was like, who is that?
He's what, 26?
He's 26. He's the oldest guy on the team. The youngest player on the team is Ryder Burton.
He looks like a baby, by the way.
He makes Zach Wilson look like every a senior citizen.
Yeah, he looks every bit of 17 years old.
He turns 18 in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today, Ryder's going to be turning 18 officially. But I just wanted to bring that up because the age is always a hot topic when it comes to BYU, but not that old as you might think. A lot of transfers, and there's not as many.
Some of the transfers are bringing up the age. Keaton Slovis has been around a little bit.
Well, and also, too, that you don't have as many return missionaries in the program. You know, the tail end of the Bronco tenure, it was like 85% RMs. It's more balanced now, where you're getting players from different walks of life. Kalani has evolved and adapted. I think early on in his tenure, it was a team loaded with RMs. But I think if you're in the Big 12 now, you can't just sign 20 players in recruiting class and say, okay, we'll see you in 2 years. You have to have an influx of immediate impact players if you want to contend on an annual basis in a Power 5 conference. And so it's a nice little tidbit. That stat was provided by the media relations team down at BYU. I just think it's always noteworthy because there's this stigma that these guys have mortgages and they've got they got 401ks built for years. You know, Talmadge Gunther, who we did interview, he does have two kids, I believe. So there are some that play in the stereotypes.
How he does it?
But most of these guys are normal college age guys.
I mean, his wife is a rock star, by the way. That's insane. I was talking with Malik Moore down at Photo Day earlier in the week, and he was, or it might have been Hinkley Rapati. We talked to a lot of guys. And if you don't follow the podcast feed, shameless plug here, follow Cougar Sports Saturday podcast feed. We get so many interviews during the week, we can't possibly play them all during the show. So we're putting bonus content on the podcast feed. Hinkley Rapati's like, I want to make a living. I'm here from 7 to 7. Because a lot of, like, I love to ask the players who have wives, like, do your wives know what they're getting into? Because my wife sometimes looks at me and like, what am I getting into? And I'm doing a radio show once a week. These guys are doing 40-hour weeks on the field and preparation for the field plus school plus whatever else. So it is a big demand on these guys. It feels like a tangent that we just went on here with age as we're waiting for Jay Hill, which that's exactly what we're doing, waiting for Jay Hill to talk about the post-scrimmage. But it's definitely not the Bronco era, Mitch. Like you said, there's plenty of youth, athleticism, speed. Like I think fans will be pleasantly surprised on the defensive side of the football this fall, just at the variety of players that are on this team.
It's a diverse roster with competition taking place every day, and I feel like it's you got to earn your spot every day. And I just think that's one of the great things that's happening right now with the addition of Jay Hill, with Aaron Roderick back for another year as the OC. I like the makeup of this coaching staff and the culture that they are creating in this program heading into the Big 12. BYU is going to have some ups and downs in this conference. There's no doubt about it. This is a tough league, and it's only going to get tougher with the four corner schools joining next year, but you can rely and lean back on that culture if you've got it in your program. I think Kalani's built a nice culture, and I think that's why he is the perfect guy to lead BYU into the Big 12 era. You know, Kalani, there's some things that you could question about him as far as maybe decision-making sometimes in games, management of the coaching staff. Like, should he have moved on the coaches sooner? It's all worked out. When he does make changes, like he did with the OC back in the day with Ty Detmer to Jeff Grimes, DC from Tuiaki to Jay Hill. It always gets better. And I think that he's done a nice job in that regard, and I think that he's built up a pretty good culture for this BYU program. It's now, I think, the big question I have for this program going into year one in the Big 12, are they going to be able to handle adversity much better than they did last year? Because last year when the losing happened, it went sideways, and it went south in a hurry. That's going to be something that I'm very curious to see from this group in 2023 this year in the Big 12.
Sticking on the theme of the defensive side of the football, Mitch, who are some dudes you're excited to see play this year? Because there's a lot of new faces. I think some fans will be not surprised, but just it's been a reworked defensive side of the football from the staff all the way down. Let's take off the guys we know. Like, of course, we're excited to see Batty. We're excited to see Bywater and Thule. Who are some other guys that you're just stoked to see play in that opener against Sam Houston?
He's a well-known name, but maybe not as well-known as he should be. I think Jacob Robinson's going to take a big step forward this year. I think the tandem of him and Eddie Heckert at cornerback is a very good tandem, and I like the prospects of what those two guys bring to that position. Still have a little bit of questions at the depth at cornerback. That is one position where I don't feel like I clearly have a sense of who's that number three, the first guy off the bench. You know, maybe Camden Garrett from Weber State, the transfer. Maybe Jaden Dunlap. I haven't seen a big enough body of work to feel like, yeah, those are the three and four spots. Maury Bamba as well. But I like that top two with Robinson and Heckard being at that quarterback spot. What about you? Who are some of the guys that you're excited to see?
You know, two that immediately come to mind, and they're both transfers, but because they came for spring football, I think they just got forgotten because there's been such a wave of newcomers. Zay Bagna, yep, and Jackson Cravens, two guys at Boise State who were productive players. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination these two will be the leaders of the D, but can Zay Bagna give you a new look off the edge rushing the quarterback? He's an agile athlete who maybe can provide you a different look. And Jackson Cravens is a dude who's been around a long time. Can he be a two-deep guy that's a good run stuffer and is a reliable defensive dude? I want to see what those guys can do, because when BYU brought them in, they were well-celebrated additions to the defensive side of the football. And then after that, you got names like Vaughn Pachong and Taggart and others to where they kind of got forgotten. But I think they're going to be reliable defenders, and I want to see if they can come in and make a big impact, because – and Vaughn Pachong fits this too. They've played a lot of football. Harrison Taggart is a nice future prospect who was a highly recruited kid, but he's not played a lot of football at the college football level. The other guys have. So I want to see them come in and make a difference right away. So those two in particular, Cravens and Bagna, I'm really interested to watch.
Cravens will be a stout run stuffer, and that's what BYU needs, because they could not stop the run last year. You think about a guy like Arkansas running back Rocket Sanders, who ran wild over BYU last year. You're better equipped. You're still going to be, you know, hard-pressed to stop a preseason first-team all-SEC running back. But I think you got better options to maybe contain him and not give up the big play as they did so many times last year to Rocket Sanders in Arkansas. I think Cravens is an important addition. I think he's one of the, you know, most needed additions from the transfer portal that BYU added in this 2023 cycle. There's a lot of names, though, on the defense that intrigue me, but you're kind of getting deep into the weeds, because then you're like, well, if he's playing, then you've had a lot of injuries or there's some issues. But
Malik Moore returning?
Malik Moore is interesting to me at safety because, you know, coming into fall camp, there was a little bit of buzz. Maybe there could be a competition between him and Talon Alfrey, and, you know, is Malik firmly in that number one spot? I feel like he is. I like that tandem of Malik and Micah Harper at the safety back end, because I feel like they're completely different safeties.
Yep.
Where, you know, Micah Harper's that hard-hitting safety that he loves contact. That's not Malik Moore's game. He wants to have that part of his, you know, his skill set as he tries to best position himself for the NFL. But, you know, he's a rangy athlete that can make plays and go get interceptions. That's what his strength has been in his BYU career. And I just think that tandem with the differences that they have at that safety spot, I like the ability there. Because if you remember last year, Malik, he goes down with a broken hand. And that was at the same game, I think it was Wyoming, where Micah Harper finally got back to full strength from the ankle injury. And then you're starting to see him emerge. But we only got one game of Malik and Micah Harper on the back end of the defense. That's a new tandem that we really haven't seen at BYU. So I'm excited to see what those guys can do. BYU safeties have always been good in the past. We haven't seen a really good tandem for quite some time. That might be one of the better tandems we've seen in many years.
No surprise. It looks like things went a little long down at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. So let's take a break here. News, traffic, and weather, and then hopefully Jay Hill right after that.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
It's complete and no touchdown!
Cougar Sports Saturday. Saturday. A presentation of KSL Sports.
KSL Sports.
Left wing for three.
He got it again!
BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans, for Cougar fans. Brought to you by Any Hour Services Electrical Plumbing, Heating, and Air. Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On Utah's legacy home of the Cougars. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back into the show here in live at Broadcast House in Salt Lake City. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte, Cougar Sports Saturday, brought to you by Any Hour Electrical Plumbing, Heating, and Air. BYU football scrimmage is apparently going long. It's going real long. Kalani's just yelling. Jay Hill's yelling. Who knows what's going on? I mean, like, you wonder what makes the coaches just extend it again. What movie was that? Again! Was it Herb Brooks in that Miracle? Again!
Yes.
He drops the puck. Again! They just keep botching the plays. A-Rod's blowing a whistle. Again! Anyway, you know what? While we wait for Jay Hill, we're still expecting the D.C. first-year associate head coach with the program. But until then, we're going to play our interview. And by the way, usually we have top five in this spot. We're going to have that up at the 2 o'clock segment, so stand by for that. Top five will be coming here today. But right now we're going to play an interview I had earlier this week with BYU offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick down at practice.
Welcome back into KSL News Radio here with BYU offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick. And, you know, I wanted to ask you a little bit of a different question here from camp. What do you think of the new clock rules in college football with the clock continuing to run after first downs? Good thing, bad thing? What do you think on that?
Well, it doesn't really do any good to say good or bad because you have to accept it and deal with it. I think you're going to see fewer plays. You basically have less time in the game, so you're going to see fewer plays, and I think it's going to affect scoring in college football a little bit. I don't think it'll be super drastic, but you are going to see scoring go down a little bit nationwide just because of fewer plays. But, you know, I think they're trying to speed up the game for television. I think it's mostly television driven. I'm not positive about that, but we're practicing that way. We're doing team drills every day where we did a 4-minute drill the other day where, you know, you got to know that clock is going to keep running outside of 2 minutes. Did a 2-minute drill the other day where we practiced the same thing, and it is what it is. You just have to accept it and play.
Well, I bring that up too because I think sometimes people think of great offenses as being these just video game like numbers, but still be a great offense and maybe win a game 21-20. This team's shown that over the years. Do you think that's going to be maybe something that you see more of in the Big 12? Because I think the outside narrative is always this is a offensive league, but it's pretty good defense too.
We want to score as many points as we can, obviously, and I think that the rules are going to affect scoring a little bit. I don't think it's going to be as drastic as what you see in the NFL, but I think, I don't even want to try to estimate, but I think it is going to go down a little just because you're going to get fewer plays. The flip side is maybe teams will try to run more tempo plays and try to get those plays in there to keep their stats and their scoring up. We will always be focused on doing what it takes to win the game first. And as an offense, the best thing you can do to win a game is take care of the football and score points. So we're trying to score every time we have it and trying to get more points than the other team. That's what it's about.
How excited are you to have Keaton Slovis showing off to Cougar fans and show that guy to the public?
Yeah, I'm excited. He's done a great job up to this point, and now, you know, it's a matter of in these next few weeks just fine-tuning things so that when we play in a real game, you know, we go out there and I'm excited for him to go out there and prove that he's the quarterback that I believe he is and that he believes he is, and we have to go prove it, but we have the next few weeks to tighten everything up, and I expect him to play very well for us.
Any chance the backup quarterback is not completely settled going into week one, or do you feel like you've already got a good idea of where that's at?
I don't really think of it that way. I think you just have to keep playing every day until it sorts itself out. I don't feel like there's a deadline on anything like that. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Right now we're only 7 practices in, you know, so there's a lot of work left to be done. Usually in football, the cream rises to the top, though. The more you play, the more the picture becomes clear. That's almost always how it works, but sometimes it takes a little longer.
Is it pretty clear on the wide receiver top three still that those veteran guys that have been around are still kind of atop the wide receiver depth chart?
I would say we have a top six. And then there's the top six are very close, and then there's a gap to the next couple guys. I don't want to speak for Fessy, but I, in my mind, we have 6 guys that are in a rotation that play primarily those 3 or 4 spots.
And at tight end, is the backup spot a real kind of point of focus to kind of shore that up after Isaac Rex?
Yeah, we're having fun at tight end right now. We've got a couple of new players that are playing really good, and I don't want to put too high of expectations there. But Ray Paulo is been probably the surprise of camp so far. Very impressed with him. He's learning what to do, but he is a big, fast, violent, athletic player. He's going to be a really good player for us at some point. You know, we have Ethan Erickson's doing a good job, and then we have Tava, this transfer from Southern Utah, is doing a nice job. Mason Fakahua, that's a fun group. I'm excited. We're going to do some fun things with those guys.
How'd you find Ray Paulo? And also, is he related to Joseph Paulo, the offensive lineman, too? Or are they? How'd you find him?
He's a junior college transfer from Southern California, and we were just searching for tight ends in the spring and got a hold of his film. And his film, it'll catch your eye in a hurry. He's a physical player. He could probably start a defensive line for a lot of teams at this level. He's a very, very good player physically. He's very new, and we're just starting to teach him what to do. It might take some time, but he's doing a good job. And yeah, JC transfer.
It feels like COVID kind of created these guys like Retzlaff, Paulo, that almost slipped through the cracks, but they can play at this level.
I agree. I think the JUCO ranks have sort of been forgotten by a lot of programs that look more to the portal. I have a soft spot. I'm a junior college transfer. Jay Hill was a junior college transfer. You know, I think there are still some good junior college players out there for sure. And you got to find the right ones at the right time when you have a need. And there's still a place for those guys.
Last thing for you, Coach. Offensive line, just seeing the personnel, the options that you've got, I mean, it's got to make it tough to solidify that 5. But how many players are you kind of pouring through to determine those 5 spots?
I might forget somebody, but I would say there's about 8 guys. I think we have 7 or 8 guys that have started Power 5 games, you know, and a few of them have started multiple seasons, you know, like you got like Paul and Simi and Kingsley and Connor Pay, talking about guys that are multi-year starters, and then we have a few other guys like Braden Keim, and I'm probably going to forget somebody now. Oh, Waylon, guys that have been starters, played a lot of games, played in big games, and so we're sorting through that group, trying to figure out, okay, what's our best 5 or 6 or 7 or 8, and what's the best places to put those guys that give us, you know, you want to get your best 5, obviously, but the chances of us playing 12, 13 games with just 5 linemen is very slim. So you have to have options. Okay, this is our best 5. If this guy goes down, who's up? If this guy goes down, who's up? We slide him over and move him here. You know, it's, you know, you have to work through all those scenarios through camp. And that's what we're doing right now. And there's some tough decisions, but it's really fun. And I love that group. Those guys are good.
Well, it looks like across the board you got a lot of tough decisions. And looking forward to seeing those decisions play out. And thanks always again for the time, Aaron.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you.
That's Aaron Roderick, BYU offensive coordinator. Good stuff there from BYU's OC. Crazy to think that he's been part of the program now for 6 years. Season on the staff. Aaron Roderick's been around for a minute. He's doing a nice job as the OC. We're taking a break. Hopefully. We've been teasing it a lot. DC, Jay Hill, coming up next here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSL Sports.
Still waiting for Jay Hill, if you were wondering. Again! Again! Do the drill! Again! Hey, if this pays off in a 8-4, 9-3 type season, you can leave me hanging. You don't even need to call if that's what that's going to result in.
We're going to point to this moment in time. Remember that show on a Saturday in Camp Kalani where they just worked those players? They had a 150-play scrimmage. They just worked them.
150-play scrimmage. We were joking in the break, too. Speaking of plays, we've touched on this. The running clock before the two-minute warning. It's not a two-minute warning. Don't aggregate me. That's an NFL thing. But at the two-minute mark, then the clock will stop. Imagine playing a heavy running team, and you're not getting 150 plays. You're not getting half of 150 plays.
You might get
plays.
Five drives or six drives in a game.
I kind of feel like that might be a useful tool for BYU this year if the running game is hitting. Because think about the Algier year if they had that rule.
Oh, yeah.
You could have really condensed some of those games because Algier was getting 3 or 4 yards a pop. His career average is more than 4 yards a carry.
BYU this season has 4 games against preseason top 25 teams in the coaches poll, which came out earlier this week. Number 12, Texas on the road. Number 16, TCU on the road. 19, Oklahoma in Provo. 24, Texas Tech in Provo. So maybe some of those games where you're facing a nationally ranked squad in league, you maybe eat up that clock and turn to Aiden Robbins, who I think looked pretty impressive in fall camp. I like Deion Smith. I like Rapati. I like the options they've got there. L.J. Martin is a true freshman. BYU's got good running backs this year, and I think definitely you can turn to that well and keep things on the ground because lower risk of probability to turn over the football. I think these are running backs that secure the ball. Falau's had his moments, Rapati, with ball security issues in the past. He seems to have fixed that a little bit. Yeah.
Did that happen at the end of last year? I'm trying to remember. Did it happen in Stanford or Boise?
Notre Dame game, he fumbled it. But in the end of the season, I don't believe he did.
Yeah.
And he took over over for Lopini at season's end. Lopini was just sidelined. And it was kind of a quiet thing. And BYU didn't make much to do about it. But they said he was sick. But, I mean, players, this wasn't COVID. You know, where you had to sit out.
It's your last couple of games.
And he was just done. And Rapati took over for him. So, you know, ball security, I think this running back group is pretty good in that regard. I haven't seen any loose balls during the media observation windows, which is always a positive because
I haven't
you got to take care of the rock.
I haven't seen a turnover in 11-on-11. We've seen some in 7-on-7, yeah. But not 11-on-11.
Yeah, so. Glasker had an interception in 7-on-7, but that was day one, and that wasn't with pads. The window that we saw with pads looked pretty clean by most standards. I mean, it was both sides making plays, going back and forth at each other. A few penalties, pass interferences. With some deep ball attempts, but
here's a question.
You're not going to argue with that.
Looking at that AP poll, opponents in the coaches poll, the AP poll coming out this week. We might be false alarm. Thought we were close there, false alarm. So of the four opponents in the top 25, what is the most gettable game, in your opinion, of those four? Because here's my dark horse gettable game, and I have no reason to feel this way.
To me, it's Oklahoma.
I was going to say TCU, personally. Mm. TCU is not running it back like they did. I know they got a lot of transfers. Maybe it hits, but they caught lightning in a bottle last year. That's going to be hard to duplicate.
I'm not sold on Oklahoma at all. I think that Oklahoma could be a 7-5 team. They were 6-7 last year.
Venables would get canned if that was the case.
I just don't buy into that defense yet. They're going to go high up-tempo offense. I'm not sold on Dustin or Dylan Gabriel either. I'm just not. I think their true freshman that's a 5-star quarterback, he's the better quarterback, I feel like it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, Oklahoma, they're ranked, they could be an option. We got to get out to the phone line. Welcome in BYU defensive coordinator coming in from Lavelle Edwards Stadium, joining us, Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte here on KSL News Radio. Jay Hill joins the show. Coach, how was today's scrimmage? How would you describe it?
Well, I'm standing in the middle of Lavelle Edwards Stadium right on the field in one of the best settings in college football. So, first off, that was a sweet part of this, just being able to play football in this stadium. We got a lot to work on. I know one thing I'm super excited about playing with this offense because the things that
Coach Roderick and his staff are doing are super hard to defend. I thought they had a great day. I thought we started slow and did a lot of good things at the end, but we got a lot to work on.
Coach, what were some of the things you were trying to accomplish in this scrimmage, and were you able to get any of that stuff done in the scrimmage?
Well, so in practice through the week, like just the way tempos and stuff go and sideline management and all those things, you just get going in practice. There's no way to simulate a game other than in these scrimmages that we have on Saturdays. And so our ability to get offensive personnel and match our defense with it, our ability to get our guys on the field and the substitutions off, that was such a critical part of today. And we were not very good, quite frankly, at the start of the scrimmage. So I was glad we got that. That's a huge step forward for us, just getting that alone. The other thing is you want to start solidifying depth charts. And there were some guys that stood out today, did some really good things. There were some guys that got to continue to step up if they're going to play on this defense. We have some guys that are rusty still from either coming off injuries or not having enough reps yet, or coming off missions, or quite frankly, just young guys that haven't played a lot that we got to continue to get better. So, I mean, all those things every day we're looking to get better. Today was really the first opportunity to get to see it in a scrimmage setting.
Who were some of those guys, Jay, that flash and show some signs that you liked?
Talon Alfrey, I think, played very good today. He had an interception, did some good things. Eddie Heckard had an interception, looked pretty good. Yeah, you know what? That's probably a better question for Monday or Tuesday after I've watched
yeah,
the film,
enough.
So I don't lie to you guys on who really stood out. But those were two plays anyway that are at the top of my head right
you know,
now.
When you brought up solidifying, have you solidified how the coaches are going to be aligned with someone in the box, some on the field? Have you settled in on that?
Well, I know for sure in the full-time coaching staff, Coach Enna is going to be in the box. He's coordinated a lot. He sees it very well. I want his eyes in the box. Coach Papinga and myself and Coach Puha will for sure be on the field. And I think Coach Guilford will be on the field, too, to make the secondary adjustments. That means somebody else up in the box, a GA, one of our analyst guys or someone will be up in the box. So,
defensive coordinator, associate head coach Jay Hill with us for a few more moments here on Cougar Sports Saturday. You mentioned this is the first scrimmage opportunity to get a look at a lot of this stuff. How much stock does this scrimmage or any scrimmage in particular hold when determining 2D position battles, all those type of things?
Well, to this point, you know, up through the first 9 practices, we were trying to get plays in. We were trying to get the defense installed. We're trying to get, you know, the discipline of what we're trying to get done. The reality is the first time we got to go just tee it up and let it rip was today. And so today was everything as far as preparation and what a game's really going to look like, and it was absolutely necessary for what we needed. We have a ton to clean up as far as those mechanics go, but you know that's not to be. That's really to be expected at this stage. So,
last thing for you, Jay, before we let you go, and we appreciate your time. I asked you about him on day one, and he's maintained on himself on the roster throughout. Has David Latu, defense tackle, has he been officially cleared and going through an acclimation period yet?
Yes, he is. He's with us. He looks good. He's a big athletic dude that I think is going to really help our defense. I'm excited to watch him play in pads. He did not go today, but I really believe he's someone that can help us.
Last quick thing, Jay, and then we'll let you go. Were there any vets or players that have been here a while that did not participate in the scrimmage?
No, they all went today. We did not hold anyone. Like I said, we have some guys, two good examples, like Ben Bywater, Max Tooley. I think those guys are phenomenal football players, and they're going to play great for us. But they're rusty. Those guys didn't go through spring ball, and they're learning a new defense. And they've only had 9 practices before today to really get out there and rep this stuff. And that's just a good example of you can be the best player in the conference, but if you don't practice, it's hard to go out there and play great. And we're all in that, coaches and players alike. If you're not doing it, it's hard to be at the caliber we want them. And those guys are just a perfect example of you just stay the course, keep getting better, keep doing what you're doing, and come first game, I think you guys are really going to like the product we have out there.
Jay, we really appreciate the time. We know you're busy and got to break down that film after this. So thanks again for joining us here on KSL News Radio.
All right, guys. Really appreciate it. Have a great day.
That's Jay Hill, first-year defensive coordinator. Great stuff.
Oh, yeah.
From the head defensive voice in this BYU football program. Jay Hill, your instant reactions to Jay real quick.
Love that no one has held out. I think that's such a good point. Like, if you're not playing, especially considering this is a new defense, I think we do need to remember that. It's going to be quite a bit different from last year. These guys got to get the reps. So I love that everyone went, which I think is going to go a long way in building that cohesive group that needs to be good if they want to have a good year in the Big 12.
Jay Hill also noted that the staff alignment has been settled in. Justin Enna going to be in the box to kind of give that bird's eye view. Justin Enna has coordinator experience. The rest of the defensive staff will be at field level. I think the booth dynamic's more relevant to the offensive side at times, yeah. But still noteworthy to see Coach Enna will be in the box this fall. Good stuff from Jay Hill. We appreciate BYU setting that up. And coming up, we got to take a timeout on the other side. We'll get to the top five here on Cougar Sports Saturday.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.